You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Many people invest in fixed deposit. You must have heard your parents investing in fixed deposit and even your grandparents. But for a lot of young investors, 5 or 6% annual interest might not be very exciting. And comes into the picture alternative investment options which provide or promises a return anywhere between 9 to 15%. But what are the risks associated with it, and should you dabble in this alternative investment space? To understand this, I have invited Yash Rungta, who runs a popular alternative investment blog called The Alt Investor.
Welcome to Why Not Mint Money, a personal finance podcast where we help you understand basic money concepts and share strategies for you to build your wealth. So let's get started with your money journey.
Hi, Yash. Thanks for coming to this episode. And yes, so a lot of people are nowadays, you know, bored with the 5%, 6% returns, and they're dabbling in a lot of alternative investments, right? So let me know, let our audience know what exactly are alternative investments and how it became popular in recent times.
Okay. Thanks, Shashin, for having me on the podcast show. When you talk about India and when you talk about alternatives, in India, alternatives are a wide thing when you compare it to your global peers, because in India, people have just slowly started knowing about equity and mutual funds and how these two different instruments can help them make their wealth. But when it comes to alternatives, a lot of people even consider bonds, you know, a corporate bond like a IIFL bond or, you know, another Edelweiss bond. They'll consider it as an alternative instrument right now. But during the pandemic, a lot of people saw a very big market downturn, and then a big rally happened. And we have reports saying that a lot of new DMAT accounts opened up, a lot of new SIPs got registered, a lot of new folios were created. So basically, people were bored and looking for new ways on where they can get more money via investing. And they, seeing that trend, a lot of alternative platforms also started coming up, saying that, hey, why are you investing in a fixed deposit which is offering you 5-6% pre-tax return, and if you're in the 30% bracket, it's just 4% return. Why not invest in a very good corporate bond or even in other innovative instrument which can offer you maybe 9% post-tax return, which is 11 to 12% pre-tax. And that's when the wave of people started realizing, hey, I can probably invest in better options which will pay me more returns. And they termed as alternatives, basically.
Interesting. So everyone kind of knows how we get the bank interest rate that, you know, bank provides us.
Yep.
So basically, you go to the bank, you deposit the money, they keep the money, and they in turn loan it out at a slightly higher rate.
Correct.
They take their own commission or charge, and the remaining amount is passed on as fixed deposit interest rate, savings rate. And yeah, so that is how the banking system works, and that's how FD and everyone are investing.
Yep.
But now you're saying the issue with that is the interest rate is not very exciting.
Correct.
There are some you know, parts of the alternative space which promises double.
Better risk-adjusted return, I would say. So there are, I mean, bank deposits are not bad for sure. It works very, very well for people who have a conservative risk profile. But people who can take a little bit more risk in their portfolio, in the, you know, at a overall, let's say you have 100 rupees, you might want to allocate 5 rupees to other riskier assets, which will make you earn a better return than a bank FD. By all means, invest, you know, whatever money you want in a bank FD. But if you want a little bit that extra for taking that extra risk, then alternatives might be the place that you can go to.
Interesting. So now my question is, how are people getting this extra interest rate? So you have already mentioned all the alternative investments have a lot of, you know, different things inside it. So a lot of different kinds of investments. So So what is exactly happening? How are they able to give the interest rate? And just for people to get some more context.
Right. So when you talk about alternatives, I would broadly classify them into three categories. One is debt-based alternatives, which is, you know, they have a fixed income element to it. You get a fixed return or, you know, up to certain return. Your upside is limited there. Then you have equity-based alternatives, which is your private equity funds, venture capital, or, you know, making angel investments, all that sort of stuff. Then the third is property-related alternative investments, which is, you know, fractional ownership platforms. And now they will be regulated under SM REITs, small and medium-sized REIT. REIT is a real estate investment trust. Some of them are listed on the market right now. But with this regulation, more and more REITs will come on the platform or on the exchange per se. So within these three, let's talk about one by one. Debt-based alternatives are things like corporate bonds, or, you know, invoice discounting, which is unregulated right now. Lease-based financing. To give you an example of lease-based financing, you see a lot of EVs now around in Mumbai, I think. Yes. Electric vehicles. I own an electric vehicle and I have to sometimes go out and take that vehicle on a fast charging station to get it charged. Now, somebody has installed that fast charging station. Let's say it's a company X. Now, that company X might have raised venture capital from, you know, external investors. So that's where the equity element of that venture capital comes in. But they might not want to use that capital to install chargers publicly at every station in the country, because then they will have no capital to play around with. So they'll come to investors like us, let's say, investor like me, who will say, okay, I'll give you 10 lakh rupees to install that charger. Just, you know, install that charger, but keep it under my name. So, and pay me a monthly fixed return, like a rental, to my bank account for whatever business you do, basically. So that's a lease-based financing. It's a three-year lease. At the end of the lease, I have the option to, let's say, maybe acquire that charger, sell it to someone else, or the company who I financed it for can acquire it from me at a depreciated value, which is, you know, as per accounting standards. So that's a model going on in the market. It's win-win for company also, because they don't have to put their working capital or their venture capital that they have raised. They don't have to dilute more equity to do this. And it's good for investor also, because they'll get maybe more yield. You know, 16-17% IRRs in lease financing is not unheard of. So,
This sounds very interesting. It must be happening all over our surrounding, but we never realize the back end system, right? But what are some risks around this kind of investment?
Correct. So, you know, because this company is a new company, let's say they have raised venture capital, so probably they are not profitable at this stage. So they have, let's say, put out those chargers, and if people are underutilizing that charger, and constantly across the whole network people are underutilizing their charger, they might not recoup enough money to pay the investors as well. So, you know, they might default on their lease payments to the investors. So that's one risk, default risk, because the company is not able to do enough business. What if the company goes bankrupt? Then they will have to find a secondary buyer. Now, there might be people who don't want to buy that secondary charger. So they might not even get the principal back. Forget about the penal interest or, you know, the lease payments. They might not even get the principal back. And we have actually seen this happen in one of the companies on a platform called Tap Invest, where a company called Melora, which is a jewelry, online jewelry brand, I think, they came on Tap Invest to get around 30 to 40 MacBooks leased, because they didn't want to use their own capital. They came on Tap Invest, got that money raised, and then gave those laptops to their team to work. The deal was about to, the deal tenure was 3 years, and it was about to close, mature in April 2024. But before the maturity, Melora had some funding crisis, and they had to return the laptops back to Tap Invest unannounced. They didn't even give notice to Tap Invest, and then Tap Invest had to liquidate those laptops in the secondary market. Now, because it's a movable asset, and, you know, MacBooks are pretty solid, and you can still, there's a good secondary market for them, they were able to recover most of the principal via that. But that being said, it did give a very big headache to the investors who were invested in that deal, and probably some of them realized that it's not for them to get into such deals. So situations like these can always happen. And that's the extra return you get for the risk you take.
Interesting, interesting. So this model is called direct leasing, right?
Correct.
What about invoice discounting? So there are a lot of platforms that are telling us, ki, hey, we offer this invoice discounting. So can you tell us a bit on how it works and what are the risks obviously associated with it?
Sure. So I'll give you an example from my father. He's a textile manufacturer in Surat. He manufactures yarn and he provides it to, let's say, Reliance, hypothetically. Now, Reliance being Reliance has a very good, standing in the market. So they can ask for any credit period they want. They will not pay up immediately. So they'll probably say, hey, I'll pay you after 90 days only. But my father needs to pay salaries to his workers and acquire more raw material and do more business. He wants to move the money around quicker. So he'll come probably to a platform and say, this is my history with the vendor, Reliance. I am doing good business with them, and Reliance being Reliance will definitely pay after 90 days. This is the dispatch note of the goods that I've already provided them. This is the GST number verification. You can check all of that. Why not give me some upfront capital? Do not give me, you know, let's say the invoice value is 1 crore. Don't give me 1 crore. Give me maybe 97 lakh rupees. Mm-hmm. And whenever Reliance pays, they will pay 1 CR. You can pocket that 3 lakhs as interest, basically, for the investor. So these platforms would then advertise the deal on their platform. And then the investor will come in and invest. But again, this is completely unregulated. It is possible that, you know, even after the goods have been dispatched, Reliance rejects the invoice because the produce or the quality of work is not up to mark. And it is possible that they don't pay the invoice. Or it is possible they even pay the invoice to the manufacturer, but the manufacturer doesn't pay the investor. So it's completely unregulated. There is a possibility to lose 100% of your principal. And we have seen that in one of the recent defaults that have happened on a platform called AltGraph, where a company called Arzu came onto the platform and raised invoices up to 19 crores, I think, out of which they were fortunately able to pay 33% or 31% of the outstanding amount, if I'm not wrong. But the rest, 69 to 67%, is still pending. And investors are, you know, they can't do anything because they signed the agreements. It's a working capital issue. Company says they will solve it, but who knows whether they will be able to solve it or not.
So yes, tell me one thing. So looking at all your examples, it looks like the platform plays a very important role. So let's say you have invested in a particular direct leasing or an invoice discounting model.
Yep.
You might have invested, let's say, a 5 lakh or 2 lakh.
Yep.
Right. And, you know, but it's not worth for you to go to the court and fight it out.
Yeah, it's not possible.
For a small amount. But yep, the platform must be having a lot of people pulling in the money. So I mean, what I want to say is how proactive are platforms when all these cases of default and everything comes up?
See, some platforms are better than others, for sure. But in the way they handle, they proactively maybe reach out to the borrower as well.
But my question is, I mean, is it a part of their duty to be proactive in this situation?
I think it's their fiduciary duty, but it's they're not legally duty bound to do that, unfortunately. And if, you know, fiduciary duty is also very important because people remember. Mm. When a default happens, people remember that this platform didn't do right by them. And, you know, sooner or later, they'll start realizing that their volumes are dropping as well. Mm. So it is their fiduciary duty, but not legally to say. Because they highlight the risks in the agreement upfront, which the investor has to sign. So, at the end of the day, investor is the person who is taking the risk, not the platform.
Got it. Okay, so this, I think we have broadly covered the debt part of alternative investment. Now, let's come to the second part, which you said is the equity element of alternative investment. So, can you give us some examples of how it works?
Sure. So, there are some examples in the market, but there are unregulated structures. There's a company called Tyke Invest, which has done CSOP-based structure, Community Subscription Offer Plan, where they advertise that you can invest in upcoming startups with as low as 5,000 rupees.
Shark Tank type of stuff,
and they were actually bringing most of the companies which were coming on Shark Tank on their platform.
Okay.
as well to raise funding. The problem with that kind of instrument, CSOP, is that it's not actually an instrument. It's a piece of paper. It's an agreement between you and the company that you are joining their community of people, and you are actually paying to join their community. And even the startup recognizes that money as revenue on their books rather than funding.
So why is the name equity even there?
It's not in the instrument. It's called community subscription offer plan. But unfortunately, they were marketing it as, you know, invest in startup. It's not an investment. It's, you know, you're basically purchasing a product because they're recognizing it as revenue. They're not recognizing it as an investment.
Can you explain how the investor would get the return? Sorry, I think I missed this part.
Yeah, no, so investor would, so because they were calling it as an equity investment, the investor would only get the return if the company decides to buy back that CSOP agreement. Now, that CSOP agreement has outlined that if you're trying to buy back within 1 year, you will get 2x. If you are doing it within 3 years, you will get maybe 5x and then 10x and then accordingly after that. But the power is with the company. They will decide when to buy back, which is right in some extent because the company needs money to buy back stuff. But the investor have no power at all. The company can also decide not to buy back at all, even if they're a flourishing business. That was how, you know, bad the agreement was.
Can you give us an example of how this works? Maybe that will give more clarity.
How this works from a
real life example.
Yeah, so there was a company called Gianni who came on Shark Tank India. It was a mini tractor company. And they came on Shark Tank, Tyke Invest right after they had their Shark Tank debut. And they were, let's say, supposed to raise only 1 crore, and these, I'm sorry, I don't know the exact numbers, but hypothetically they were supposed to, let's say, raise 1 crore, but they were able to raise 10 times of that via Tyke Invest allowed them to raise 10x of what they initially wanted. And Gianni, after a point of time, within 4-5 months, said that, hey, I want to exit this agreement, and I'll give you 15% premium over the purchase price that the investor said. But the agreement said 2x. I need to get 2x. The investors revolted. Tyke Invest intervened that, you know, you need to pay 2x. And Gianni agreed as well that they will pay 2x. But when it came to the time of repaying, which was 3 months later in October, they went missing. Gianni founders were not traceable. Or they were not able to get a hold of them, basically. So Tyke sent a legal notice that, hey, you promised, you need to now pay it, because we have already communicated it to the subscribers, but nobody can still get a hold of the founders. So most likely investors lost their money there.
This is still an ongoing case?
It's an ongoing case, yes. So Tyke has done a legal case, I believe. But again, these agreements are very out of thin air. Most likely won't stand in the court as well. And a couple of these agreements were not even on stamp paper, which is like the basic requirement to contest a case in a legal you know, court or something. So
God, it doesn't sound very favorable for investors.
I know. See, that's the thing. Alternatives will carry risk. You are taking that extra risk to get that extra return. And I feel that people, unfortunately, don't worry about the risks more. They only worry about the returns. Mujhe 18% milega, or I'll get 16%. That's what I care about. But you have to realize that there's so much risk in those deals. Nobody's giving out free money. As such.
So mutual funds are subject to market risk.
Exactly. So alternatives are subject to 10 times the 10 times the risk that mutual funds are subject to, I would say.
Yes. So now let's come to the final part, area of alternative investment, which you said is the real estate. Real estate.
Yes. Yeah. So real estate, I feel, is a good area of alternatives, actually, because a lot of Indians lock their wealth in their residential homes because they want to get a piece of property. And property is a good diversification, for sure. There's no doubt about that. It has shown to be a good diversification if you invest in the right properties as well. And in some cases, good appreciation as well. But residential properties, first of all, are very difficult to get into, because look at the Mumbai housing market. If I have to buy a 2 BHK house in Andheri, that's at least 3 to 4 crore rupees. And that's a very steep number. And then even if I put in that initial upfront investment and put that house on a rent, the rental yield I'm going to get is probably 2 to 3%, which is not very attractive. So then, even if I want to still get a piece of property, commercial property makes much more sense for me. Think of a warehouse, which maybe Flipkart can, you know, take on a lease for a 30-year lease. A warehouse on the outskirts of Mumbai, maybe in Bhiwandi, or maybe outside of Jaipur, or somewhere in all different regions. And Flipkart will pay me 8 to 9% yield, rental yield, over the life of 3 years, with some increase every year. So I get to take a piece of that warehouse. So let's say that warehouse costs 15 CR. I can invest maybe 10 lakh rupees. I'll get that proportionate piece. 150 other people will invest that money. And then I can own that warehouse. And whatever rental yield comes from Flipkart will be passed on to me month on month. So it acts as a good cash flow income for me as well, passive, via my investments. So that is how the fractional ownership real estate platforms right now in the country are working. There are different types of fractional ownership that is going on. One is commercial, residential also some people are trying to do. And then the third one is holiday homes, where they are buying homes in places like Goa or Coorg or Manali. And then basically you as an investor can also go and stay at that place for maybe 10-15 days every year.
How much money do you need to buy one of these holidays?
If you have to buy it in whole, then maybe 6-7 crores maybe in a place like Goa, a good holiday home.
So you have to pay 6-7 crore, or can everyone pull in the money? And
everyone can pull in the money, and they will get certain days in a year that they can come and stay at the property. But that property will basically, other times they will be, you know, they'll probably put it on Airbnb or on booking.com, and they'll generate income via that and then pass it on to the investors. But in off season, the investor can probably go and stay at the property and enjoy the property as well. So that's also another segment that is coming up.
So let's say there is a favorable time of the year,
yeah,
where everyone who pulled in the money,
yeah,
wants to stay. So how would they resolve?
So the platforms that are bringing it are bringing a booking engine as well. So where you have to decide well in advance that when do you want to go, and they will block out the season, the maximum time that you will get tourists. They will block that out because that's the time the property will earn good money. So you can't give it out to the investors unless, you know, there's some exception or something. Or the investor can book the property themselves, because in a way the money is coming to them itself. So that also they can do. But otherwise, off-season, you know, properties are available. You just have to book in advance and plan in advance.
Interesting concept. Yes. I know we're reaching the end of this podcast, and I know alternative is a very big space.
Yep.
And, you know, we couldn't cover everything under the sun regarding this topic. But you have a very interesting blog, right?
Yep.
By the name Alt Investor, which tries to cover all things happening around this industry. So tell us a little bit about your blog and how it started and how it's going.
Yep. So blog is called Alt Investor, like you rightly said. And we are trying to create awareness about alternative investments. But we are focusing on risk more than returns. And we run a WhatsApp community of around 850 individuals at this stage, where, you know, you can join the community, learn about alternative investments. We have most of the platform founders on the community as well, and very good pro investors as well. You have any doubt related to alternative investments with respect to risk, return, or, you know, how did this even come about? Is this even legal? The blog will help you solve for all those questions, and the community will help you this way. In terms of how I started it, I was investing into alternatives, unregulated and regulated, for last 3 years for me and my family portfolio sitting in London. And I realized that, hey, nobody's talking about this. Everyone wants returns, but nobody's talking about the risk at all. And that's how I decided to start a blog. It helps with personal credibility as well to some extent. But it, when I write about something, it helps me understand the product even more better as to how do you communicate it to the public. So,
yeah, fantastic. I myself read it. And if you want to have a general understanding of this topic, then that's the go-to place. So, yes, before I let you go, tell us very quickly how one should look at alternative investment. What, so let's say someone has a 100 rupee portfolio, then how can he or she incorporate alternative investment as a part of their portfolio?
Right. So if you have 100 rupees, and if you have done a risk assessment, there are multiple tools which help you analyze your risk propensity. And if you think you are in the high risk category, probably allocate around 10% of your portfolio to different types of alternatives. Do not do it more than that, even if you have a bit higher risk, because some of these instruments are unregulated. And we have seen that in one example called Gropital, where Gropital was a farming startup, which was taking pooling in money from different people, and then they were investing or leasing out farms and then growing agri-produce on that and then providing tax-free returns to people. They were able to raise 182 crore rupees in total AUM. And a lot of people I spoke to on the community had invested more than 30% of their savings in these kind of schemes. And now all of that is, you know, locked up by SEBI because they are doing an investigation on Gropital and it's giving them a bad headache. Even if they were in the high risk category, is it worth to lose 30% of your entire capital to earn, you know, 14-15% tax free returns? No. So be realistic about your returns. Your high risk, do not go more than 10%. Your medium risk, do not go more than 5%. You are very conservative and you want to play around, do not go more than 2% of your overall portfolio.
Interesting. I think with that, we can end this episode. And thank you once again, Yash, for coming.
Thank you, Sashin, for inviting me. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of today's episode. If you would like to know more about this topic, then you can reach out to me on Twitter. I go by the username @SashinNJ or LinkedIn using my full name, that is Sashin Ningthau Khongjam. We would be happy to take your suggestions. That's all from our side. Thanks for tuning in. See you in the next episode.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.